Welcome to yet another episode of When a Guy Has a Really Fucked Gender. As always, I'm your host, Jolene, and I'm joined this week by Judas. Judas, would you like to say hello to the audience?
Hello, and welcome to When a Guy Has a Really Fucked Gender.
Hell yeah. Judas, how would you describe your gender in this moment?
Born again man. I would say, I guess.
Born again man.
Yeah, yeah. Kind
That's
of.
Excellent.
Yeah, but in some ways I feel like the more in touch with my masculinity, I guess, the more I resonate with being a woman. You know, like the more I come into myself as a man, the more comfortable I feel with expressing femininity. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah. That's not an unusual, I think, you know, trans people in those sorts of directions, have definitely, talked about that on the podcast before. And also, you know, I don't think it's not really the sort of thing that I feel like has broader discursive, traction, or doesn't really get around. But I do think that if you, are around trans people long enough, you definitely start to hear that. But yeah, what's the sort of, I mean, we've talked a little bit, so I guess I know where we're going to go, but we need to get it for the audience. Why do you say born again man?
Well, I came out as FTM very young, or like some kind of flavor of trans, when I was around 9 years old. And then I went through middle school, like up until I was 13, I was living pretty much stealth as a preteen boy. And at that point I could go stealth because, you know, when you're that age, puberty hadn't really begun to wreak havoc on me, you know, and all of the preteen boys around me kind of sounded the same as I did, so it was easy for me to pass as a preteen boy. But then, like, around the age of 13, I decided to socially detransition. And then when I turned 17, I kind of had, like, a major mental breakdown. I was like, you know what, maybe I was right the first time, you know, after all that, you know.
Okay, yeah. Hell yeah. can you tell me a little bit about, I'm always, really, I find it, on like a kind of like personal level, really fascinating when people, are able to kind of like articulate, themselves as trans that young, just because, I think I've probably talked about on the podcast before, right? I'm a twin, and my twin sister is cis. So growing up, it was just sort of like a very kind of like the idea that like gender could be a thing that was wrong. I mean, I think that's a difficult idea. That's not an idea that's like in most people's lives, but I think in my life, it would have been like, it just felt so like obvious that it was like, oh no, like I'm not the girl, she's the girl. But I guess I say that to say, like, so how do you come out as a 9 year old?
Okay, so I was born in Brooklyn, so I was like exposed to all kinds of freaky shit. And I remember one day, this is like a core childhood memory of mine, that I guess I like buried for years and years and years, because I only told my therapist about this when I was like 15 or 16, and I broke down crying while talking about it. I remember when I must have been like, I don't know, 6 years old, my dad took me to this art exhibit in New York, and there was this giant photo on the wall, right? Giant black and white photograph. And it was a picture of like this prostitute, and she was lying on a bed, and she was like visibly trans, and there were needles scattered all around her on the bed. And I remember she was She was kind of staring at you with, like, this thousand-yard stare expression. And it's just one of those memories that's just kind of burned into my brain forever, and that was the first time I ever heard of the concept of transgenderism, because my dad explained it to me. So, obviously, that was kind of traumatic. But then, like, a couple years later, you know, after having that experience, it's like, I recognize that being trans and being gay, that these were things, but I never conceptualized them as things that I could do. You know, they were things that, you know, people, like, I had this idea that if I did that, something horrible would happen to me, and my parents never really drilled that idea into my brain, at least not intentionally, not until I was older. But I just gathered that just from seeing that. But then when I was 9, it's embarrassing to admit this now, but it was reading about Caitlyn Jenner coming out in the newspaper that was, like, the second time I really, like, heard about that. In a way that I could apply to myself, because I could look at this person who wasn't in a horrible situation and be like, oh, well, if this person did this and isn't in a horrible situation, then I guess I can do it, you know, and I won't get hurt.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's two sort of very different spectrums of the trans experience, both sort of like, I mean, yeah, this art piece, as you describe, right, what a way to sort of, you know, encounter transsexuality for the first time or whatever. But also, I think, I've heard so many stories like that of either, not even necessarily artistic depictions, just like any sort of depictions or depictions of, I guess, sort of like reference to transsexuality as this thing that comes adjacent to, like, all these, you know, really scary or upsetting sort of social situations. How did your dad explain that to you? What was his kind of like, I don't know, did he have, was he sort of like a good, like, did he, what was his understanding of transness at this point when you encounter this art piece?
Okay, well, I was about to say, yeah, I think that it's more common to encounter these sort of, like, depictions of, like, male-to-female transsexuality as something that's synonymous with all of these, like, horrible living situations and stuff than is female-to-male. And I think that's part of that is just, like, trans-misogyny, you know, like transitioning from male to female is considered more of a downgrade because of misogyny. But I mean, then again, there also was Boys Don't Cry. And I remember, like, after I came out as trans, my dad was always trying to get me to watch Boys Don't Cry.
As, like, a 9-year-old?
Like a little bit older, but...
Okay.
But, yeah, and anyways, he just described it to me very bluntly. Like, he just said, like, oh, yeah, this is, like, a transgender person. I don't think he elaborated much about it after that. Although, later, when I was, like, a little bit older... one of the first albums that he played for me was, have you heard I Am a Bird Now by Anthony and the Johnsons?
I don't think I have.
Well, the musician from Anthony and the Johnsons now goes by Anoni, but that was the album name at the time. That was an album he played to me when he was more supportive of it, I guess. And he said, like, this is the most devastating album I've ever heard. And he played this song for me called For Today I Am a Boy. And I mean, it's a very, very straightforward kind of song. It goes, someday I'll grow up and be a beautiful woman. Someday I'll grow up and know the power in me. Of this I'm sure, but for today I am a boy. For today I am a child. For today I am a boy. The whole album was written by a closeted trans woman. And I'm, looking back, I'm really curious as to how he even found out about that, or, like, why it resonated with him so much. I mean, he has said some things to me that I was kind of like, huh, you know? Because I remember one time he straight up told me, you know, like, when I was really upset that he wouldn't let me medically transition, he said, you know, I know how you feel, because at night I used to cry myself to sleep wishing I was a woman. And I just sat up and I was like, what the fuck? You know, I didn't have the heart to tell him, you know, that's not normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Well, I mean, yeah, that sounds like, there's definitely some stuff going on there.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Oh, and I remember he also said, like, he was part of, like, this, like, I think it's called, like, the One Step program or, like, something like that. And one of the, and they make you do challenges. It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that. And one of the challenges was you have to do something that you're scared of, something that you know is going to embarrass you. But they let you choose what you're going to do. And what he chose to do was wear a dress in public. Yeah. And he also said, and also he would sometimes talk about, like, I used to live near this tranny bar in New York, but I never went. I don't know why I never went, blah, 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 you know? I don't know if I can say that on the podcast. Oh, wow. I mean, it is a podcast about guys with a really fucked gender or whatever, but, you know, censor that if you need to. I don't know.
Oh, I won't. Fascinating. Okay. And so... Yeah, so, I mean, right, you talked about sort of... So, what's the kind of... How is the idea of you being trans received when you come out around 9 years old?
At first, you know, it didn't... My parents seemed like they didn't really fully understand it, but they were accepting of it, and they, like, would refer to me by a different name and, like, male pronouns and whatever. But... they actually became less supportive over time, if you can believe that. I was the one who turned them transphobic. You know, it's funny, you hear, like, usually it's the other way around, right? Like,
right.
Oh, your parents are transphobic, but they'll come around eventually, you know? And for my parents, it was the exact opposite thing. You know, I think it was because, like, I just... grew increasingly more mentally ill over time, and then my mom was searching for answers, so she chose to believe that my gender dysphoria was, like, the same thing as me having an eating disorder or self-harming, for example, you know.
Right, it's all the same.
Yeah, same and age. That was...
Yeah,
and then, you know, she got really involved with the whole gender-critical thing, and she kind of sucked my dad into it, and that was when they decided that they would stop calling me by, like, a male name altogether. I never got to medically transition. So I don't even know if I should technically be calling myself a detransitioner, because it was, like, a social transition, I guess.
Well, but also at an age where that's kind of like you were able to sort of, like, be stealth
actually
throughout middle school, which, I mean, like, there are people that do stealth without medical intervention even in adulthood, but I
feel
like
you have to be really, really genetically blessed to do that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a thing that is available to everyone. It definitely does require, like, certain things need to be the case to make that work out. But there are definitely but it is not, I don't know, I think that sort of detransition seems like an apt word for describing the experience of having been socially one way and then sort of going a different direction. So, but your parents became less accepting and sort of got into the gender critical stuff before you detransitioned?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was, like, a period of time where they were not really respecting your pronouns and your name and such, but you were still stealth at school, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a weird situation to be in.
No, I mean, yeah, it sounds like it, but... I can imagine. What did you, so when, why did you decide to sort of, like, detransition after having, I mean, like you said, you were stealth throughout middle school. I think, when did you say you detransitioned?
13.
Okay. Well, I guess let's talk a little bit about being stealth in middle school. I don't know. That sounds interesting. I don't know. I mean, right? I was a boy in middle school as well. Very interestingly. I don't know. What was that like? How did you find that? What was your kind of how did you find that?
You know, the thing is, like, well, I was stealth for, like, most of it until this, okay, so there was this one kid that I had beef with, just because he was annoying as fuck, and, like, he would never shut up in class, he spoke really, really loudly, and he would just make fun of me for no reason, just make fun of my outfits or whatever, and then one time I said to my friend, my God, that guy is so annoying, and he overheard me, and he was, like, pissed at me. So one day I was like, writing something to somebody using email. And he leaned over my computer screen and he saw that the name listed on my email was my birth name. And then he started like screaming to the entire class, like, do you know Judas is actually a girl and his real name is insert my birth name. And so I challenged him to a fight. We were, like, fighting in the bathroom, and the PE teacher had to come in and pull us off of each other. And then I was the one who had to apologize to him. And the crazy thing was, like, I remember the principal telling me, well, he had to grow up in the South as, like, a black gay boy, so you should be sympathetic to him. But then I was like, well, if he grew up as in the South as like a gay boy, surely he would understand what I'm going through, you know? That didn't make me.
Yeah. It just seems like a weird kind of like non sequitur. Like it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strange because, like, in fact, it made me hate him more because, like, If you have been through the exact same kind of, like, discrimination that I'm going through, why would you choose to inflict that upon another person? Even, he could have chosen anything else to make fun of me for, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's also just, like, outing someone like that is really, really pretty fucked up.
Especially in fucking middle school, you know, in, like, a suburban town. And what else?
So you weren't in Brooklyn anymore by this point?
No. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. Then we eventually settled where I am now. I do remember, like, I had this really intense but short relationship with a girl in middle school, and one day she came up to me and she was like, dude, somebody told me that you were a girl in sixth grade, is that true? And I was like, no. And I mean, technically it wasn't true. I was already identifying as trans in sixth grade, but I don't know, I probably should have told her something about it. That was kind of unethical, but you know. So yeah, those are like my poor memories of being trans in middle school. The funny thing was, I was bullied less for being a masculine girl and more for being a feminine guy. You know, because most people thought I was a feminine guy and not a masculine girl.
Right.
Especially considering, like, I was a goth kid for, like, middle school and high school. most of high school.
Right. Yeah, I know we talked a little bit about the goth stuff. We'll get to that in due time, I assume. Okay. So then, right, your parents kind of get into the whole sort of gender critical thing. And that, what's the difference, or what's like the, how long goes by between your parents getting into the gender critical stuff and you detransitioning?
I kind of don't remember. It was kind of like a gradual shift for them.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. It probably wouldn't be, yeah, like all at once or something. Okay.
It wasn't, then, yeah.
Or, sorry, what were you going to say?
Sorry, I was just going to say, it wasn't like one day they were like, yes, we unconditionally support you and love you and you're our son and blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly overnight, they go team turf or whatever. It wasn't like that, you know?
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So then you do detransition at you said like 13 or 14 or something like that, right?
13.
13, okay. And this is, you're still in the school where you'd been outed, right?
Yeah. Although, okay. I switched schools, like, soon after that.
Okay. Because I was going to ask about, I guess, I don't know, the sort of experience of having been stealth to having been outed to detransitioning seems like.
Oh, I switched schools, like when I detransitioned, like I went through middle school as a boy and then high school as a girl.
Okay, but it wasn't the same district or anything like that. So
No.
Okay, I see. Okay. And yeah, so that sounds extremely strange. I don't know. I mean, you said that, was there also a sort of like, I mean, yeah, we talked about this a little bit before, and then I can't remember if you mentioned it already, that this also kind of coincided with a, ideological or sort of like perspective shift for you with respect to like, I guess both other trans people and then also like questions around feminism and stuff like that. And I don't know, I guess sort of like, how did that process go? Like,
well, for a while I kind of became like a full blown rad femme. But the funny thing was, like, after getting really into rad femme stuff, that kind of made me circle back around to getting into transfeminism, because I was like seeing the way that these rad femmes treat trans women. I was thinking, how the fuck are you too stupid to understand that men hate trans women because they think that being a woman is the worst thing that a man can be? You know, like that seems like the logical conclusion, but no, you hate these people? Yeah, it just didn't make sense to me. But yeah, I actually did get quite into gender critical stuff after detransition, just because like that's kind of like the natural pipeline. Like you look up the word detrans and you go, the first thing that pops up is like the detrans subreddit or whatever, which is filled with gender critical people. And you know, I was kind of rationalizing this in my own head, like maybe they're right, maybe I am just a cisgender girl who transitioned to escape being sexualized or whatever. And did you ask me like what prompted my detransition or whatever, or did I just make that up?
I think I did, or I asked you. I might not have, but I would also be curious to hear that story. Yeah,
because it was like a bunch of things. It wasn't just one little thing. But
right.
This is gonna sound like so fucking ridiculous, but the main reason why I actually detransitioned was because I read this book and there was this female character in it who I was obsessed with. She was like my waifu at the time and I wanted to skinwalk her. Which is funny because I basically detransitioned for the same reason why TERFs think that autogynephiles transition, you know? Like, it sounds so ridiculous in retrospect, but I was like, I saw this type of girl and I was like, maybe I could try being a girl again if I was like this type of girl, you know? Which led me to creating this whole female alter ego in my head, mm-hmm. you know? And this is another thing. Yeah, I feel like any time I regardless of whether I see myself as a man or a woman, I'm always kind of playing a character, you know? Gender, like, the whole gender performance thing is not something that comes naturally to me at all, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then, I mean, there was a bunch of other stuff, like as I said, like, I was thinking maybe I really did just, like, transition because of deeply rooted sexual trauma or whatever, which is funny because the actual sexual trauma only took place after I did come out as trans, so that doesn't even make sense, but whatever, that was how I was rationalizing it in my head at the same time. And I also was, like, browsing, like, looks-maxing incel forums, and I was seeing all of these threads that are like, I'm a 5'6" manlet, and I asked out a girl, and she rejected me, and the next day, 5,000 women accused me of sexual assault falsely and threw me off a cliff because I'm a disgusting 5'6" manlet with a round face. And I was like, oh my god, I'm a 5'6" manlet in a round face. What if, like... I'm going to become an incel or something, which sounds ridiculous, but, like, I was going crazy, you know?
No, but I mean, like, I don't know, like, that's just how you are, right, when you're that young. Like, that's, I don't know, I definitely had, not those exact experiences, but I feel like there were definitely kind of analogous moments or something. Okay. Fascinating. So, you sort of have this kind of female alter ego. What's that like? What is, I don't know, what's, do you, are you comfortable sharing what that book was and the character?
It was called Ghost Girl. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's about, like, this teenage girl in high school who dies, and then she kind of floats around her school as a ghost, and she befriends this girl named Scarlett Kensington, who is the only person who has paranormal abilities and can see her. And Scarlett Kensington is, like, this really cool, badass goth chick, basically.
Okay. And so that was the character that you were sort of imprinted on?
Again, and this is like another reason why I, like, half jokingly called myself a female autogynephile for a while. This is, like, another huge stereotype is that, oh, if you have AGP, they're always obsessed with, like, the kind of girls that they wanted to fuck in high school or whatever, like the goth girl or whatever, you know? And then you try to become that girl, you know? But that was me. That was literally what happened to me.
Okay. Yeah, no, but I mean, that, yeah, I'm sorry, that is, yeah, conceptually very funny, but, yeah, so then how do you find, like, doing high school as a girl, sort of having had this, like, I think in, like, one of our, like, earlier conversations, off air, you, like, referred to yourself as, like, having been male socialized by, that's what a social transition is, right? You, like, male socialized yourself throughout middle school and then went to, in high school, sort of going back to identifying as a woman and sort of existing socially as a woman. What's that kind of, yeah, what's that like?
It was interesting. I mean, I still felt very, very alienated from other girls, mm-hmm. you know? But I chalked it up as I chalked it up to me not being pretty or enough or whatever, as opposed to, you know, me not being a girl or whatever. And I think that's probably because in our society, we conflate femininity with attractiveness in a way that we don't conflate masculinity with attractiveness. You know, you could be really fucking ugly. You could be, by societal standards, I guess, like, you could be like a big sumo wrestler kind of guy who's like covered in grease and sweat with like a big bushy beard or whatever, but you're still masculine, you know? Whereas I've never seen like an ugly woman be referred to as feminine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of stripped of my womanhood, I felt like, because I wasn't attractive. And then one day when I had that mental breakdown and like chopped off all my hair, I realized, you know, I've never felt more free than I did when I stopped pursuing beauty, I guess. Because it felt like the harder I tried to chase beauty and femininity, the more ugly that I got. And like every time I tried to fix a new flaw would pop up in its place. So I just stopped.
Yeah, it's kind of a endless game, right? Yeah, following that. And also, I mean, like, that's also, I think, pretty, like, standard for, like, high school, I think, that age era. I don't know. Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way regardless of, like, what else they have kind of going on in their life. Although, of course, right, obviously that's exacerbated or sort of made more, given extra stakes when you have sort of like questions around like transition and stuff like that. So I assume your parents were happy that you detransitioned.
My mother was over the moon in particular. Yeah.
Yeah. Did it continue to come up, or was this just sort of like, was this like the end of like, I don't know, did they like stop caring about like the gender critical stuff, or were they still like, I don't know what their kind of involvement was, but.
I mean, I'm sure my mother was posting on her little forums, you know, being like, so glad we finally rescued our darling daughter from the cult after years and years and years and years or something. You know, I went through her email at one point and I saw this email that was like, we finally found a non-affirming therapist for our darling daughter after years of searching. Because, you know, my mother would do this thing where like, she wanted me to go to therapy, but she only wanted me to go to therapists that would agree with her worldview and her parenting method, so I never got any therapy that I actually needed.
Right.
You know, so we were switching therapists and even doctors all the time, because she would get pissed off if they didn't agree with her not letting me transition or whatever.
Right. And definitely not helpful to, like, building a kind of productive therapeutic relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you said you eventually retransition. How does that kind of come about? Or what is, I guess, right, you said, you know, you sort of at the beginning said born again man. What's the kind of, and I mean, I guess you talked a little bit about sort of that coming through, the kind of interest in, I guess, feminism generally, and then, I guess, just sort of seeing the, it's interesting because it does seem obvious to me, right? But it also is the case that, like, I think a lot of people that are even in that similar position don't see the sort of, right, like, contiguity between, like, don't sort of see, like, trans misogyny as misogyny, or don't see, like, what you were talking about, the kind of obvious, like, connection between trans women's experience of misogyny and, like, misogyny generally. So I don't know, yeah, it's interesting. What was, like, the kind of, I don't know, do you have any sense of why that was something that Because, like, I agree. I think that's, like, an obvious thing that, like, people should get. But, like, the it's like, pretty, you know, you can, like, look at these sorts of communities and see plenty of examples of people not getting it. So I don't know if you have any thoughts for why it was something that, you know, sort of, like, made sense to you versus, like, it seems like it's something that a lot of people struggle with, or...
Yeah, speaking of trans misogyny, you said something really interesting. I saw one of your tweets that was like, it's hilarious how like a lot of TERFs assume that transbians were all straight guys before they transitioned, whereas you know barely any people who are transbians that identified as straight guys before transitioning. And mm-hmm. I think there is something similar, that parallels that experience with FTMs, where like you'll identify as a lesbian and then when you transition you identify as a gay trans guy, because the thing is, lesbian relationships, they're one of the only kinds of relationships where a woman being the masculine one is more normalized, you know. So you cope by like, you know, convincing yourself that that you're a lesbian when in reality what you really want is to not be a woman, you know. Right. And as for the born again man thing, I just think it's like a reference to how, you know, gender critical people think that transness is a cult or a religion or whatever, you know. So yeah.
No, that's funny. I like that. That's good. but yeah, well, so, where was I? Yeah, I don't know. It's so that's your, I don't know. Have you come back out to your parents as a man, or where's that sort of stuff at?
Yeah, I have. I tried like a couple of times and they kind of just shut me down. I remember, like, one time when I was 15 or 16, you know, throughout, like, the majority of, like, my time living as a detransitioned woman, it was kind of easy for me to shut out that part of me, I guess, and just keep it locked away, because there were a lot of things that I enjoyed about being a woman, honestly. Like, I enjoyed mostly what I enjoyed was the freedom of expression I felt like I had as a woman more than a man, like, being able to wear whatever I wanted without receiving so much criticism for it. I mean, I did receive a ton of criticism for it. I was still heavily bullied, but a lot of the time when I was bullied for it, it was because people thought I was a cross-dressing man. However, I did have the occasional moment where I would see a guy walk past who kind of represented the exact type of man that I wanted to be when I identified as trans, and he just seemed to do it so effortlessly, and I would go into like a fit of rage and jealousy. And it was the kind of fit of rage and jealousy I never had when I was looking at other women, you know, no matter how pretty they were or whatever. And like around that age, 15 or 16, I remember coming into the school counselor's office, like wearing a dress and a full face of makeup. I wore way more makeup than every other girl in my class, dressed more femininely, but I still broke down crying and telling about how I'll never be a father, and it just eats away at me. And I wrote a whole poem about this, you know?
Okay. Fascinating. Do you have that? Do you want to share that, or?
Yeah, I can read the poem. It's like,
yeah, I know. Yeah, we talked a little bit also before this. You write.
Yeah,
we'll have, if you want to read some of Judas's writing, yeah. I'll have a link down in the episode description.
Yeah, the poem is called "Why I Never Became a Father," and it goes, "Because I will never be able to love a woman in the way that a man could. My heart hungers for that love. I don't want to inflict my own neurosis upon a child, but I want to have an opportunity to reincarnate myself. I want to be a father. A father teaches a child how to navigate the world. A mother tends to a child's wounds when he inevitably trips and falls following the path to manhood. I want to look down at the face of a laughing baby and see little reflections of my own smile and his, to know that he is, in a way, a fragment of me, but the fragment of me that he possesses will have a chance to start anew. I'm a boy and a man and a girl and a child. I can be whichever one you please, depending on what's convenient. I'm a Matryoshka doll of my own experiences. I'm a jawbreaker. I never really matured. I just held on to that anger, put it in storage, hoped that I would make use of it someday. I want to believe in a better world, but I don't think I can. Whoever promised me that someday it won't hurt anymore lied, and it hurts to be helped, because I don't want to believe that there's anything wrong with me. I thought I would get used to the constant ache, but I find myself ripping open the same old scars over and over. Fuck me, that stings. It kills me to watch a mother cry, snot-ridden strawberry face, juxtaposed with the footage. He wasn't raised this way, but no one is raised to rape, maybe to hunt for sport at most. There's nothing you can do. If you teach a boy to hate, he'll listen. If you teach a boy to love, he'll hate anyways just to spite you. Sometimes I doubt myself, but when I look at you, I feel secure in my decision. You help me remember why I do what I do, and in your desperation, I will help you to understand exactly why I never became a father.
Yeah. Also, I don't know, very interesting, I think, especially in consideration with your discussion earlier about your father's maybe questionable gender situation. Yeah, I don't know. Thank you for sharing that. No, okay. Yeah, so... Sorry, I know...
Oh, shit, I was just gonna say something. I forgot that I edited that when I made a zine out of it, and there was a part that I left out that, near the end, where I said, sometimes I doubt myself, but when I look at you, I feel secure in my decision. You help me remember why I do what I do, and in your desperation, I will help you to understand. If boy, an object in the shape of a disembodied fuckhole I found under your bed, a snapshot of an open mouth frozen, a vessel waiting to be used. Else if girl, a pencil sharpener without a blade on your bedside table, reminds me of exactly why I never became a father. Sorry, I forgot about that part. Yeah.
Okay, no, damn, that's, yeah, heavy. Okay, but yeah, I know we also, you also gender. What's your, I don't know, what do you have to say about that stuff?
What do I have to say about that stuff? Oh, man. What was I going to say? I feel like, you know, I was a big goth, like, both when I identified as trans and when I stopped identifying as trans. And even after I stopped identifying trans and tried to fully reintegrate into society, as a woman, like, the transphobia still haunted me, and it was something that I couldn't escape, because people would accuse me of being trans even after I detransitioned, you know?
Right.
And it was funny, because before I detransitioned, people would always tell me, you know, you're way too feminine to ever pass as a man, your face is too round, your voice is too high, you're too short, blah, 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 blah. But then, like, the second I gave up and I said, you know what, actually, I am a woman. I've been a woman this whole time, and you're right. That was when people started saying to me, no, you're a man, you know? it really felt like I couldn't win. And I think that, part of that was probably because I just wore very heavy, like almost drag queenish makeup. Like if you look at trad goth makeup, for example, it's really not that dissimilar to drag queen makeup. So maybe like people were thinking I was a drag queen or something, but these things would just happen to me over and over and over again. Like I went into a public restroom while wearing like a full face of makeup and like a mini skirt and fishnets and platforms. And I heard this woman say to another woman after I entered the stall, is that a man? And there were only two women in there besides me, so I know that they were talking about me, you know?
Right.
And another time, I remember going to a friend's house, and when I opened my mouth to start talking to my friend, I noticed her little brother was standing there, and, like, he looked at me with, like, this look of shock and horror on his face. And then he, like, ran up to my friend and, like, pulled her aside And then my friend came up to me and said, my little brother just asked if you were born a man. You know. And I remember, like, God. It's weird because, you know, my voice isn't deep enough to pass as a man's voice. But then the idea of a woman, like a really womanly woman, having my kind of voice is also kind of weird, you know? So I was kind of in this gray area, I guess.
Right.
And another thing was, like, I noticed that all of the same people who hate goths also tend to be very, very homophobic. That also applies to people who hate furries, but that's another conversation for another time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think any of those... Yeah. I think any of that, any of, like, the sort of subcultural stuff, it's rare to find, like, someone that's, like, not, like, homophobic, that's, like, down with the, or that's someone that is homophobic but is down with, like, the subcultural stuff, right? Because I feel like that stuff usually just sort of tracks, like, a preference for conformity that, like, yeah, like, being goth or being punk or alt or whatever the, I don't know what all the kids call them all nowadays.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, all that sort of stuff is very, like, there definitely are people that are, like, you know, sort of, like, you know, oh, like, I'm, you know, cool with the, I don't know what, cool, like, you know, yeah, like, it's fine to be goth, but, you know, don't do any of that gay shit or whatever. I guess Morrissey, right? Isn't Morrissey, like, an asshole about a bunch of stuff?
I don't know.
Although I don't know. I feel like I don't know. I never listened to the Smiths. So I don't really I don't really know.
You were gonna say something?
Oh no, go ahead. Say what you're gonna say.
I was just gonna say that, like, one thing I noticed is that when people make fun of emos, like, they're always making fun of emo boys. You know, it's never emo girls. Like, when you see these memes making fun of emo kids, it's always an emo guy in the picture. And, like, for a while I was wondering, why is that? And then I was like, oh, yeah. You know, like every time you see, like, an old video of, like, an emo boy talking, it's like he's always got this kind of nasally voice, you know, and it's like, you know, all of these emo bands kissing their male band members on stage and, like, writing angsty songs about, like, thinking that maybe you're bisexual or whatever. Like, then I was like, yeah, a fucking course. No wonder people hate emos. No wonder I was getting the shit beaten out of me, you know?
Right, yeah.
And, like,
thanks
another
for the memory
thing.
Right? Thanks for the memories. His, you know, he tastes just like you, but sweeter. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah. Or, like My Chemical Romance even have a song that's, like, you know what they do to guys like us in prison, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and another more extreme example of this is that, like, I actually made a whole TikTok talking about this, but I noticed that. Okay, so do you remember when the Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard case was going on and people were, like, absolutely ripping apart Amber Heard all over social media and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. This sounds like a total non sequitur, but hear me out here. Johnny Depp was best friends with Marilyn Manson, right?
Right.
And I saw someone make a TikTok about this, and all of the comments were like, I trust Johnny. I believe that he's not an abuser, but that Marilyn Manson guy, he's always given me really weird vibes. I believe the allegations against him. I was like, no fucking wonder you believe the allegations against the guy who looks like a drag queen, but not against the handsome macho guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Of course you think the guy who looks like that is, you know, obviously guilty. And I mean, I do believe he's guilty, but you get what I'm saying,
right? Yeah. It's sort of, yeah, it's a separate question of how these people get believed, like, yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting. I didn't yeah, I didn't I don't know, I didn't hear people saying that, but I 100% believe it. Yeah. Like, yeah, the
And like sorry, go on.
Oh, no, what were you going to say?
Of course, like, people are going to say, oh, it's because he looks scary. It has nothing to do with that. You're making everything political, and it doesn't have to be political. It is fucking political. Why do you think he looks scary? You think he looks scary because he wears makeup. And, you know, it... And I see people talk the same way about Jeffree Star. You know, like, I know what you people really think, and you're never going to say what you really think out loud, because if you said what you really think, you'd sound like a bigot, and you want to market yourself as a leftist person, but you're not. You know, like, I see right through them, and I feel like a crazy one.
No, it's extremely, like, I think a lot of that stuff, people, like, it is really funny to see, watch people just kind of, like, really... plainly or like unadornedly insist that, like, things that are just like prejudice, like, and like a like is justified, which is like with especially with like sort of like things that are just like kind of like aesthetic, like yeah, like the sort of like goth or like the sort of like, yeah, like that kind of goth makeup looks or stuff like that. It's very like I don't know, it's really goofy, and like, I don't know, people really do just like kind of, I don't know, they do a really bad job thinking when it comes to that. It's like really funny. They're just like I don't know, yeah, they like will
no
insist
critical
completely
thinking.
yeah
like, they'll literally say the most Hitlerite thing that you've ever heard in your entire fucking life, and then they don't even understand why it's so Hitlerite, and that's the problem. And I feel like I'm going fucking crazy because I'm the only one that can see it, you know? Like, these things are so deeply embedded into our society, people don't even realize why they're wrong, you know?
Right, yeah, no, it is literally, like, people will just, like, say, like, flatly, like, oh, but like, this is like the good prejudice because it's right, and it's like, okay, well, that's literally like how prejudices work. It's, you believe that you're right.
Yeah,
right, like no one says like, oh, I'm prejudiced but for a bad reason. Like, everyone thinks that they have a good reason. The thing that you know, sort of like the thing that you're supposed to realize eventually is that just because you know, think you have a good reason or you can explain it to yourself doesn't mean that you actually should.
Yeah,
you know, there's plenty of like, I mean, this is like a thing I think about often, with like respect to like sex and failing at, like, right, like you talked about sort of people would like weaponize like the same traits of yours against you one way or the other, to sort of like say like, oh, you're, you know, actually a man, or you're actually a woman, but you're being deceitful in this way, or you're being deceitful in this other way, or you're, you know, all this sort of stuff. The specifics of sex are, I think, to some extent, so one, there's like actually like a lot of overlap in terms of how people's bodies actually exist in the world, and like sort of like how they appear and stuff like that, but they're also so sort of like overdetermined and vague. Overdetermined is the wrong word for this, but they're like vague in such a way that you can almost always find something to call someone on, and so it's kind of like this, like, it's kind of like this, like, game of like, game is the wrong word, but it's you can get to like the sort of like, you can get where you need to go from anywhere. Like, if you decide that you want to like you know, make some kind of like accusation on like a, not like an accusation in like a sexual sense, like in the sense of like sexual assault or something like that, but like an accusation of like sort of being sexed wrong, like being, you know, too feminine or not feminine enough, or feminine in the wrong way or masculine in the wrong way, or any of these sorts of things, you can do that with basically anybody. and make it work. If you have, like, it has way more to do with, like, other sorts of things going on around them.
Yeah, I also feel like it's very much like a, this very much ties into, like, how passing is, like entirely contextual, you know? Like, for instance, I believe that I don't pass, but here's the thing. If I'm with a group of women, I'll get called ma'am. But if I'm with a group of guys, I get called sir. So it really depends on the situation, you know?
Yeah, no, there's tons of, like, sort of situational, there's so much, like, situational, like, I mean, I've talked on this podcast before, like, I pass better in the South, where I live currently, than I do, like, when I go back to, like, bigger, more liberal northern cities, and that's because there's stricter sort of gender norms. The gender norms that I'm kind of, you know, sort of, like, falling within, I'm able to fall within, the ones that I sort of, like, hew towards in the South are more definitively feminine than they are in the North, where there's more permissibility about both the sort of categories. And so it's, I sort of can get one or the other. At least this was a couple of years ago. I've since transed harder, and now I pass flawlessly all the time and never have trouble. that's a joke.
Yeah. For sure. I've heard a lot of trans people who live in conservative areas say the same thing. I would say, like, the only good thing about living in the South or whatever is that you don't get faced with, like, these weird particular sort of microaggressions that only come from people who consider themselves woke. You know, and what I mean by this is, like, let's say I'm at a party that's, like, all guys, but then someone will come up to me and they'll refer to everyone else there as a he while calling me a they, and they think that they're doing that to be progressive, even though I have a very, very unquestionably male name, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, or like for a while, right, I was working in a vegan restaurant, which, you know, sort of, even though we are in the South, right, obviously sort of like our clientele tended to capture more kind of like progressive people or queer people. And, you know, I had so many instances of customers, like, as they were leaving, as they were about to never see me again, ask me my pronouns. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, I'm like, you know, it's like fine, right? I sort of, you know, I've talked about, like, it's almost like the, you know, what is it, like, Leslie Feinberg had that thing about, you know, I've been respected with the wrong pronoun and disrespected with the right pronoun.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like, there's, you know, I've been disrespected by being asked my pronouns before.
That's
absolutely a thing. Any trans person will tell you that's a thing. There are disrespectful ways of doing it.
But here's the thing. It's like, if you know trans people well enough to ask us our pronouns, you should know us well enough to kind of be able to sense what our pronouns are on vibes alone. You know, like, I know
least,
a trans
like,
woman.
When and how to ask it, you know? Like, right? Like, I think I told this story on Twitter before, right? I had a coworker ask me my pronouns a couple months ago at work. But, you know, the way he did it was he waited till we were alone and he just went, by the way, like, I just want to make sure, like, what are your pronouns? And I was like, oh, you know, and it was a situation where, right, he's my coworker. The role that he works in is one where he's probably going to have to talk about me to other people. So it's like, yeah, he is going to need to know my pronouns. And, like, you know, he waited till we were alone. He asked me my pronouns. He got them. And he was like, okay, cool. It was like a nice thing. It was very respectful. It was like, it was just like a good thing. It was not like the, what are your pronouns? Like, as I'm walking away from you to never see you again.
It's like the way that they ask it, it's like they're asking you your name or something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I remember one time walking up to my dad and being like, has anyone ever asked you about your pronouns? And he was like, come to think about it, no. You know? And he's like, you know, a big, like, 6'2" bearded guy. And I was like, yeah, no figure, you know?
Right. Are you still there? Or did I lose you?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Sorry, I thought you might have dropped a call or something. Well, it's been going for about an hour. I feel like we've covered a lot. I don't know, was there anything that you still wanted to cover or that we didn't get to talk about that you wanted to bring up, or do you feel like you've kind of told your story? At least to this point. I expect that there'll be much more story for you, but you know, we can't tell the future.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep going, or we could end it, whatever is like more convenient for you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, do you have more to say, or
it's, as I said, it's like hard for me to just like talk about things on my own without somebody prompting me, you know?
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, sort of like what you, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you said born again, man, you said that sort of you're feeling safer is maybe not the right word, but you're feeling more interested in kind of accessing sort of like, I guess, quote unquote, like male femininity or something like that. Is that all correct, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you have anything to say about that? I guess that's sort of like an in process sort of thing.
You know, I mean, I said that, but at the same time, it's like I feel like I can only start to access femininity again when I'm on testosterone, you know?
Right. And that hasn't happened yet, if I understand.
No.
Do you have plans for that, or is it still sort of up in the air enough?
I have a plan for that. You know, I considered DIY for a while, but I'm not sure if that's like the best idea, considering I still live with my parents. And I'm just afraid of, like, having packages seized and all of that stuff. Like, if my package gets seized, I can't, like, I have, like, a minimum wage job. I can't just, like, afford right to buy another one or whatever, you know? So I guess I'm just going to wait until I can access it through, like, Planned Parenthood or something.
I don't know. I mean, like, I know I asked you about your parents earlier. Do you think your parents will, I don't know, I suppose that's going to be probably a source of tension.
Here's the thing. It's like, my therapist kind of like peer pressured me into doing a family therapy session with my parents the other day, which of course ended in me having like a massive mental breakdown. Because my father was just talking about, like, he literally said, I'm Team TERF, like Dave Chappelle, during the family therapy session meeting. And he was like, he started going on about, like, how he thinks I'm delusional or whatever. And then I said, I remember saying, like, even if I forced you to call me by my name, it wouldn't matter because you'll never see me as your son, you know? And the thing was, like, at the end of that therapy session, or, like, the next day, my dad agreed to start calling me by my name after years and years and years because he felt bad. But, like, I guess he doesn't really seem to conceptualize that, you know, the damage has already been done, and that's what I meant when I said, like, even if I agreed to, like, even if you agreed to call me by my name, like, you know, it doesn't matter because you'll never see me as your son. It's not genuine.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, sort of, I think, I've definitely known, you know, people whose parents were willing to do the work to sort of rebuild that kind of trust, but it's a really long process to get there, and definitely not. I mean, obviously, I hope for your sake that, you know, the best thing that's possible. Also, sort of, like, realistically, and also, right, I mean, you don't, I don't know. I mean, I don't... I suppose on the one sense, I don't think anyone really ever owes forgiveness to anyone, but also forgiving is usually good, question mark, when it's been earned. I don't know. You understand what I mean, though, right?
Yeah. And I mean... You know, it's funny, I got, like, super wasted the other day, and I posted this video of me, like, crying drunk and saying, you can tell I'm really drunk right now because I just called my father and told him I love him and I forgive him for everything. You know? And it's like, that's not what I said. I said he's my best friend and I forgive him for everything, but, you know.
Well, yeah. As I said, you know, I hope the best for you, and yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I hope that we're able to check in some point in the future, and things are going. The guy has a really fucked gender. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Judas for sharing his life with us. Like I said, there'll be a link down in the description where you can read some of Judas's writing.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's. My pleasure, and yeah, thank you to Lin July for making our theme music, which you're about to hear the outro of, and thank you to the Patreons to support us on Patreon. If you'd like to do that, there's also a link down below. Until next week, or 2 weeks from now, whenever, I don't know how often I do this show anymore.